Good morning, welcome back. So after a long Yom Tov, a month of Yom Tov, Baruch Hashem, we're back now in straight sailing for a little while. And so we have a lot to cover. This is a wide open year of topics and ideas. So again, I'd just encouragement, if there's anybody who has questions, thoughts, topics, please, you know, things which come up at work, personal life, travel, whatever it is, bring them in and like let's deal with them. There's been like many shirim, which have been the basis of your questions. So please, as you think about things, as things that you encounter things, let's make them part of our learning. I'd like to thank today's sponsors. I'd like to thank you, Huberfeldts, for sponsoring L'Ilui Nishmas Avram Tzvi Ben Shalom. That is Mrs. Huberfeldt Sr.'s father, whose yahrzeit was on Simchas Torah just 2 days ago. Also, L'Ilui Nishmas Elka Bas Nissan, Jonathan Lederman's mother, whose yahrzeit is going to be this Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. To make 100% sure. This coming Tuesday. And again, it should be the Ilunish Meseihem. We thank Jonathan and Shalom for just being in the shir from the beginning, and to continue to be part of it. Thank you so much. And Emetzah Hashem, their memory should continue to live on as we continue to remember them and learn on their behalf. So it turns out that just 3 days ago we started saying Mashiva Ruach, and it's working, Baruch Hashem, in this district of the world. It seems to have been working a little bit before now as well, in certain southern districts as well. But we're going to focus right now on the northeast. And we started saying Mashiva Ruach, which is absolutely perfect because the rain has just started coming now. We had, thank God, a mostly dry Sukkos, and which is a great blessing. And now we are in territory for rain, which of course brings with it rainbows and Parshas Noach, which is perfect because that's what we're about to learn. There is so much to uncover in all of Bereishis and Noach. We don't have sufficient time at all in 2 weeks ever to cover it, and certainly not this year where we have 1 week and 1 day. But we can take one section and try to unpack that section. We've all learned little ideas here and there, and we've come across and we've heard the Shabbos table, we've read and listened to many various ideas about the rainbow. But let's start at the very beginning. Let's try to unpack this in a logical format and get some of the meaning that's behind this, as well as the halacha and how this really works. So, it happens to be that there are two primary places that the rainbow appears in Tanakh. And the first is the most famous one, which of course is this week's parasha, which occurs at Perek Tes and Bereishis, which refers to right after the flood. So Noach has found dry ground finally. He is now getting off the table with his family. And at this point in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes an announcement. Hashem says very clearly to him in Source 1. I'm not going to read the whole section, but this is the whole section in Perek Tes, Pasuk Tes, 9:9. I'm making with you a covenant for you and all your children. I'm going to make it with everything in the teva. You know, we're used to thinking that we're special, right? But apparently the guinea pigs and the groundhogs were also part of this deal, right? Because they were also on the teva. I'm going to make sure you're never going to be fully destroyed by this flood ever again. Here's the sign of the covenant. This is what you can expect, that I'm going to fulfill my word. I'm placing my bow, my rainbow in the clouds, and it is between me and all of the lands. Question? No question. Okay. So here we go. So this is what the Pesukim tell us. Hashem says, I want to make sure this doesn't happen again. Despite how frail and fallible humanity has proven themselves to be, we're not going to do this business again. And how am I going to show you? I'm going to show you by presenting this rainbow in the clouds. There's so many questions we could ask at this point in time. There's so many, why, what's the significance, you know, why this particular sign? But one just, rather than complex questions, let's ask a very basic question. And that is really good or bad? Meaning, so you see a rainbow, so is that good or bad? Meaning, is the Torah telling us that this is a good thing to see or not a good thing? On the one hand, it sounds like from the Pesukim, is this a good thing?
No. It's a good thing,
meaning like we want. This is like a get out jail free card in Monopoly, right? This is fantastic. That means to say that the next time that you transgress something, Hashem is giving us a ironclad guarantee that He's not going to do this again. That's a fantastic thing. The flip side is. Right, so the problem is that when you have to pull out that card, that means to say you were speeding, right? So that means to say that there was something that was happening that which warranted that. Listen to the way the Midrash describes it. The Midrash has a fascinating description, which is going to lead to an interesting halachic conclusion later on. The Midrash in Bereishis Rabba says the following. Starting, 1 second, let's start at the beginning. This is the covenant I'm placing between you, the Doras Alam, for all generations. Omri Biyudon, the Doras Ksiv. So he says an interesting point. He says that if you look at the word the Doros, which means to say for all generations, it is actually written Chaser. Okay, so that means to say that it is missing a Vav in its inscription. So what is the significance of the fact that the Doros, for all generations, is missing? It's almost as if it's not really for all eternity that the covenant is going to be there. Why? He says, Prat l'shtei doros, because for all eternity, there is going to be a rainbow which will appear, except for two periods during human existence, two generations. The doros shel Chizkio, the generation of Chizkio HaMelech, and the doros shel Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and the generation of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, who were that body of leaders who supplanted, in a certain sense, the kings, who took the leadership at the beginning of the second commonwealth, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Chizkia Moitzi Doron Shalan Shekhne Zagdala Umevi Doron Shal Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Fascinatingly enough, Rabbi Chizkia supplanted, he took out the generation of Anshei Knesset HaGdola at the beginning of the Second Temple reign, and he supplanted it with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which was many centuries later. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lived during the times of the Hadrianic persecutions. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, so we're talking about in the years 100, around 100, 130, that's what we're talking about. So really, 500 at least years later on is when this occurred, this event of we'll call the absence of the rainbow. Then the Midrash describes a story. Eliyahu Zacholatov Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Havon Yasvin Tnein Bahachada. So Eliyahu Anovi was having an audience with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is one of the famous earlier Tanaim to be found in the Mishnah, one of the teachers of the Mishnah, not the Gemara, early. Matun Shmua min de Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And there came an announcement that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is going to visit. Now, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was a later Amira, he was still a Tana, but a late Tana, so he came well after Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Amri ha'amara d'shmaita ne'il v'nishayla. He says, he has a question to ask in front of Eliyahu. All Eliyahu zachol atov l'gabe. So Eliyahu enters in front of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai to answer the question. Amalei min imach. So Rashbi asks Eliyahu, who is with you? He's accompanying you. Amalei gadol ador Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. I'm with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi of the yester generation. Amalei niras okeshes b'yomav. So he says, well, one question. Was there a rainbow in his days? He says, yeah, I imagine so. I think there was a rainbow when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi lived. Im nira akesh es biyomav leis hava kedai lemechme savar apai. Says, sorry, he doesn't have the right to come in front of me, says Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, if he saw the rainbow. Because I was one of those people who the rainbow did not appear during the generation. Now this is, what a statement. And the Rebbe actually goes on with some really astounding statements of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, which sound incredibly, we have to say, in inverted commas, arrogant, which are certainly not what he's talking about. And that's we did talk about this in Lag BaOmer, what Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is really getting at over here. Because Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is not just playing games when he says these kind of statements. It says that there's a very specific agenda that he has. Not for now. But nonetheless, what you do see over here is from this Medrash is that we'll call it the greatest pinnacle of achievement and greatness is measured by whether you had a rainbow in your life or not. I mean, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, sorry, if there was a rainbow in your days, that's it. Now, it is interesting historically speaking, because Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai lived at a terrible time. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai lived at a time where there was incredible persecution to the point that he spent 13 years in a cave. just to appreciate things, right? The Romans were not tame and wonderful people. They massacred many hundreds and thousands of people. So it's interesting that even despite that, we're talking about how the rainbow never had to appear, meaning as bad as things got, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was still holding that that rope. Yes. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai actually lived at the time in Israel. In Israel, he was at the time post destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, at the times when there was the rumblings of rebellion leading to the Bar Kokhba revolt, and he was caught in the between that because they went for the clerics. Right, so they went for the Rabban, and that's when this is the period when we're starting to see the 10 martyrs being killed. You know, so or not starting, but we're seeing this is the spectrum of that. So we're talking about a really bad time. You know, but nonetheless, apparently on a divine level, it was less dangerous now than it was at any other point in history. Fascinating enough, in terms of what we call Hashem's, you know, scales of balance. So what this Midrash is essentially doing, if we just look back at this, the Midrash is saying, well, if you look at the Pesukim, yeah, it is a good thing. It is a good thing that we have a rainbow, but you just don't want to see it, right? Meaning, we'd rather that we wouldn't have to pull out our rainbow card, right? Or rather Hashem didn't have to pull out the rainbow card himself, right? That's what this seems like from this Midrash's attitude from the Pesukim. Now, happens to be, this is not the only place that the rainbow is mentioned in Tanakh. Happens to be, there is another in place which also derives a certain halachic outcome. Both of these psukim do. And that is to be found in Yechezkel. Yechezkel Perek Aleph. What is the significance of the first chapter of Yechezkel? The first chapter of Yechezkel is what is known as the two sections in Tanakh, which is called Maase Merkava, one of the most esoteric sections in Tanakh, where it's a description of a prophet seeing into the divine chambers, or the throne room of God, where you have a prophet who's experiencing this communion with the divine to such a level that they almost have full access of experience, it sounds like, and they describe it. So in Yeshayahu, Perek Vav, that's one place where we see it. Yechezkel Perek Aleph is the second place we see it. Yechezkel, fascinatingly, not just to appreciate this, is living in Bavel. Yechezkel is the prophet in exile. So he is already exiled from the first stage of exile of Bayis Rishon, before the destruction, and this is what he's seeing. He is seeing, it's fascinating why it was that he specifically saw it, but he is giving his nevuah to the other people of Babylon who are sitting on the Nar Kfar, who are witnessing or the unfolding of destruction in the east, in Israel. So this is what he's seeing, and he gives this long description of what the angels appear like. And these are, again, this is the kind of thing that the Rambam says we don't understand, we don't have access to, and we certainly don't teach in public or understand about it. This is like, you know, heavy Kabbalah. But nonetheless, what the Pesukim say themselves, we do have a little bit of access to. We can actually read some of it. We don't understand what Barak means exactly. We don't understand Chashmal, all these the Kabbalistic terminologies that he's talking about. But at the very end of this, Yechezkel talks about how at the very end of this, you saw what we'll call this penetration into the highest realms. He sees a form. He sees a form on the seat. That's all he gets to. And in the end, this is the last pasuk of the Maase Merkava. He says, starting on the top of page 2, Hagesha, he says, it's at the very bottom of page 1, Kamari Hagesha Shasher Yeh Be'anon, Be'yom He Hagesha, the form of a rainbow on a rainy day, Kain Mare Hanoga Soviv, and around this throne, I see this light which expresses itself in the form of a rainbow, Mare Demus HaKvod Hashem, which is the expression of the honor of Hashem. Honor, of course, is a very specific technical term. It's an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a particular form. And I fell on my face and I heard a voice speaking. So the last thing that he sees in Maase Merkava, the last perspective that he has of the throne chamber is this light which is emanating and the light refracting into its multiple colors. That's what all he sees. As Yechezkel describes, very different kind of perspective. From this pasuk, let's ask the question: you know, what kind of perspective is this? Good, bad. What is the tone of this experience? Well, it sounds like it's positive. Meaning, it's the closest he's coming to Hashem within the scope and the limitations of our senses, right? Meaning, just our senses are very limiting when it comes to the Almighty and the All Powerful. But it's almost like it's a good, but it's an overpowering experience.
Also be like a stop sign.
Right, this might be the last thing. You can't get there, right? Right, so this might be, there might be a tone of caution in this particular in this particular perspective. Take a look at the Gemara says. The Gemara actually says, Lahalacha, fascinating thing. The Gemara in Chagiga Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph says, based on this experience, there are certain ramifications. This regulates behavior. Take a look. The Gemara says, "Kol shelo chas al kavod kainai rasui lo or ratui lo, depending on the girsa, shelo boi la'olam." A person who does not care about the honor. Now, the word kavod should ring bells because you just saw that word, right? Anybody who doesn't care about the honor of Hashem, it's better that they weren't created. So, what's an example of a person who doesn't care about the honor of Hashem? Mahi, Rabbi Abba Omar zamistak al keshes, a person who looks too closely at the rainbow. Why? Rav Yosef Omar Zeh Oiver. Rav Yosef gives another option. Zeh Oiver Avera Baseiser, a person who does a Avera in private, because they think, you know, maybe Hashem has got other things to do right now, right? So that you're sort of, you know, you're saying Hashem, you know, it's Hashem's not really, you know, doesn't omniscience isn't you know working today, so like that's not a good thing. That's not a really good thing. So the Gemara explains itself. Mistakal b'keshes, dechsiv, quoting the pasuk in Yechezkel, kamarei ha'keshes asher yebe'anon b'yom ha'geshen, kamarei ha'noig ha'saviv, humarei demus kvod Hashem. Why is it that it's considered like you're not concerned about the honor of God? Is because that's what Yechezkel saw. So we shouldn't be looking too closely, meaning like coming back to Eddie's point. Like when you're looking at the rainbow, ultimately, if that's what Yechezkel saw as sort of the innermost chamber, then maybe we don't have the right to look that close, right? Meaning maybe we don't have the right to go that far inwards. Are we, you know, are we on the level? Are we b'nei hachi to penetrate that far? He says, don't look too far. Don't look too deeply at this. Has this got anything to do with Noach? On the surface, not really, right? This sounds like a very different experience. Now, Shalom.
Why would he appear when Hashem appears?
Well, that's a great question. Why is Hashem appearing if it's not, so maybe there's two types of rainbows, right? I mean, if you just think about this for a second, right? We got to sort of unpack how these two relate to each other, how these two very different appearances sort of relate or don't relate. Yeah, Steve.
And if it is a sign, which it was clearly stated that it's a sign, Hashem told us it's a sign, then we have to recognize it in some way.
Right. So we can already see how we're getting like mired over here, because on the one hand, it sounds like we are supposed to notice it, but it sounds like, you know, it's dangerous. Right, the Gemara continues. By the way, another aspect of how dangerous this is. The Gemara continues a few lines later in the Gemara and says, "Kol mistakeh b'shlosh dvarim ein av kehos." There's three things a person looks at too long; their eyes weaken. Now, by the way, this does not mean to say when one goes to the ophthalmologist, that means to say that one's going, you know, the prescription is going to be increased. Usually, when the notion of kihui einayim is on a spiritual sense, that means to say you're looking at the same thing; you just can't see more. You're looking at something, you can only describe the physical qualities of it. You can't really see. You know, when we talk about, the, as an example, the Gemara in Bracha says earlier on that if a person walks, Daf Mem Gimel, if a person walks a Psia Gasa, that a person loses 1/500th of the Ma'or Einayim, 1/500th of the gleam of their eye. That doesn't mean to say that a person's prescription keeps decreasing every time they take fast steps. What it means to say is the faster we move in life, the greater our inability to be able to discern that which is really going on the spiritual realm. So we're losing that somehow. What are those three things? Those three things are bekeshes, uvanasi, uvakohanim. When a person looks at the rainbow, the nasi, that does not mean the president of particular countries. That means to say that we're called the spiritually appointed leader of a generation who has some form of godliness, which is expressed through them, uva kohanim and the priest. When are we not allowed to look at the kohanim? Specifically, birkas kohanim. Now, the Gemara does clarify that birkas kohanim is specifically in the Beis Hamikdash where they use the Shema Mefarash, where they're using Hashem's full name, and they are essentially their hands on an aperture directly to heaven. So we shouldn't be looking. As a commemoration of that, that's why the minhag is to look down to if one's on the men's side to put a talis a little over one's eyes, so one shouldn't be looking at the kohanim. But that's as a commemoration of this. So when we get down back to the base of Mikdash, we don't look directly at the kohanim when they will be using the Shema Mefarash. But that's the same. We'll call it that's the same category that the keshes is in. It quotes the same pasuk because it's an expression of God. That's how far it goes, right? So we on the one, it's like very strange, right? On the one hand, we have this idea where it's this positive negative kind of push me pull you experience of Noach, and then when you get to later on Kabbalistically or the experience is something which we should really be avoiding because it's so deep. And then why does Hashem really give that to us? Barbara, what do you think?
I just want to make sure I understand. try to dissect it in such a way that you ignore the fact that it was sent for a deeper level?
You're giving a suggestion, right?
I'm trying to see if that's what
okay, so I haven't made any suggestions yet. Let's appreciate the problem first and then before the suggestions. Okay, so the problem is that these two different experiences of the keshes yield very different reactions to them in terms of what we're supposed to do. So we're supposed to be noticing the fact that God is reminding us that this is a moment of potential distraction. Or are we supposed to be looking away because this is an expression of the glory of Hashem? What are we supposed to do? Right, these are different emotions, these are different actions and reactions. So what are we supposed to do? That's the question I'm just trying to appreciate at this point in time. You're making a great suggestion, which we're going to get to in a second. Yes.
Aren't they the same?
In which way?
Because if you think of the instruction that could have fallen on us, and think of the saving us,
so maybe the tool of salvation is Hashem's, we'll call it absolute presence, which is a very fascinating idea, which Moshe is suggesting to me. Maybe what does it take to avert distraction, is Hashem sort of comes out, right? And that's the power, or the only thing which can really say, which is a very fascinating idea, which is actually we're going to see later on the Chizkuni, and it goes in such a direction. Fascinating enough. So what do we do, Lalach? One second, let's go a little further. I want to just cover a little ground. The Gemara actually relates to both of this. This Gemara, the next Gemara we're going to see is the most famous Gemara on the topic. This Gemara is actually describing the halachas of rainbows. This is the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, the very bottom of the page. This is the perek, which is the ninth perek of Brachos, which describes a lot of what's called Birkas HaShevach, the blessings of praise of God. So we're in the section, we're in the mission, which deals with the bracha you say on lightning, the bracha you say on thunder. That's the midst of the topic that we're in right now. And the Gemara says in the middle of this, Omer Rabbi Alexandri, Omer Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Alexandri said the name of Yeshua ben Levi. Of course, the name of Yeshua ben Levi should be familiar to us, because he was the person in the Medrash who was declined the presence of Rabbi Yeshua by Shimon by Yochai because of the rainbow. So it's fascinating that he finds his way into the Gemara of the rainbow, just as an interesting side note. Harayas akeshes be'anan sorich sheyop yipol al ponov. Shenemar, as he says, a person who sees the rainbow should prostrate themselves. Now, that doesn't mean don't bow to the rainbow. What that means to say is a person should be in a form of submission. As it says in Yechezkel, Kamara akeshes sheyop be'anan v'goymer. Because it says that that's what Yechezkel did. When Yechezkel saw this, the ultimate throne chamber, he collapsed, right? He wasn't staring at it. And that is the beginning of the Gemara sounds very, very much like the Gemara in Chagiga, right? That we should got to be very careful of how much we look at the rainbow. However, Laiti Olah B'Marava, they cursed him in the west. Who's in the west? Israel, right? So they cursed him in the west, and they said, "Mishum de'mechzik haman de'sagi lekashta." Don't collapse because it looks like you're serving the rainbow. That's not a good reaction. So, aval baruchi vaday mevarech. You can certainly make a blessing. So the first we're seeing of a blessing on the rainbow. This is the first time we're encountering it. My mevarech, what bracha do you make? Baruch zocher abris. Blessed is Hashem who remembers the covenant. But my nisatana, there's another brisa which suggests Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Meroika Omer. Rabbi Shmuel has a different suggestion. Neeman bevrisoi v'kayam b'mamara. He is trustworthy, he is faithful in his covenant and established in his word. Omer Rav Papa hilkach neminir l'tshuvayu. Rav Papa says, Rav Papa was a later than both of these previous opinions, and says therefore we say both of them. Baruch Zocher Abris. Neeman bevrisoi v'kayam b'mamara. That's why the bracha is so long, because we're actually incorporating two aspects over here. Is Hashem's remembering His covenant and establishing His word. We can argue what the different terminology means in a moment. But here we go. What the Gemara is doing is a fascinating thing. You see, in this Gemara as well itself, I would argue, you're seeing both these two experiences of the rainbow coming together. On the one hand, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying, "Prostrate yourself," meaning like collapse in submission, because look what you're looking at, God. And then they say, no, that's a little too extreme, but say a blessing. But what's the blessing? The blessing is Zocher HaBris. But the Zocher HaBris isn't the Yecheskel experience. There was no covenant in the Yecheskel experience. Where's the bris?
Noah.
With Noah, right? So, coming back to Moshe's point, it sounds like there's somehow seeing the presence of God in this experience is somehow reminiscent of Noach's bris, and that's the Gemara converges the two together. So the question is, if we're not supposed to look at it, how are we supposed to say a bracha? You're like, you have the special, remember the solar eclipse, the special glasses? Right? How does that work? What are we supposed to be looking at? The most obvious suggestion is what Barbara was suggesting, which is in fact suggested in the Avudraham. Rav David Avudraham was one of the precursors to the halachic works on the Siddur. He says in Source 7 the following. He quotes a question which was asked in antiquity to the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher in Germany. He in Source 7 he says, Nishal HaRosh, Eich Mistaklim HaKeshes Keshem Avarachim. How, pray tell, can we look at the Keshes when we bless? Right? Your eyes go dim, so don't look at it. So then you can't bless. So then why is there a bracha? Right? So we caught it in the circle. So he says, there's a difference between histaklus, which means to say gazing, and seeing. There's a difference between gazing and snapping selfies. And taking a look and saying a bracha, so therefore that is the distinction. Of course, we're supposed to be remembering something when we see it. There's a difference between seeing and gazing, right? So this is not the moment to be gazing, which is codified la halacha, because there's only one sif in Shulchan Aruch which explicitly talks about this in Aruch Chaim, and that is in the Shulchan Aruch Reish Chav Tes Sif Aleph in the next source. Quoting our Gemara, Haroya Keshes Oimer, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Socher Abris, Neimam V'Risov, V'Kayam B'Mamaroi, that's our Gemara, and adds the last line, V'Asur Nistakel Baba Yosef, don't spend too much time looking at it. Why? Because the reminiscent, the hangover of essentially the Gemara Nechagiga, derived from the Pasuk in Yecheskel, which is, that's too much the presence of God. So look at it, say the bracha, and then look away. Don't spend too much time gazing at it, which is a basic division of what's going on here. We haven't got the why yet, right? But we do have a how. And there was a question, Amy, yes.
I wanted to get to the why.
Yeah.
I guess the question to me is also like when.
Yeah.
When does it appear? And is it, do we look at it as a natural phenomenon?
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. Okay, we're going to come back to that in a moment because we haven't had a chance to get there yet. Hang on to that thought. Tibby, you had a thought?
Yeah, just one question.
Yes, bilateral. Oh, yes.
But the word is Elohim, so does that...
Very good question. That's a very good question. So he's making a very good point. Is this, you know... Well, another way of rephrasing Tibby's question would be is, who is the Keshes for? Who's the target audience, right? So I'd like to come back to that in a moment, towards the end as well. Is Hashem showing this to himself, or is he showing it to us? Right, it's just, you know, that kind of relates to that question is... Says Minas Adin, Minas Arachaim, right? Who's the target audience over here, which kind of relates to that?
I'm not sure if you could get the Tshuva theme here, but I'm just thinking, if it's over the page, you can stop me. Don't the Tshuva Shema Gazet Kisar covered? So it's a trigger that we need.
Interesting.
To do
that's a very nice idea.
That's why it has to see that
very nice. So what Moshe is suggesting is that maybe it's to stimulate our actions, which allows us to get to the Kisar Kavod, which is that experience of Hashem, which is, so Moshe is supporting Moshe, and we're in the right track over here. Okay? Okay, on that track. Let's have a little further. So the science suggestion, which is the Barbara track, which is going along the route of the Avudraham, later codified in Shulchan Aruch, is about how long you spend. However, there are other ways of looking at this. Let's think about it from the following perspective. There are Mepharshim who say things which I guess we don't hear in the regular classroom about the rainbow. Fascinating ideas, and that is the following. Here's one example. The Netziv from Volozhin, Rav Tali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, suggests that in fact, there are two types of rainbows. Now, this is we don't usually hear this kind of thing. There are two types of rainbows. He says, if there is a rainbow which appears as a flash, it's a very fleeting perspective of this defraying of light, that's a bad rainbow. That's a rainbow which is reminding us that there could be an imminent flood coming. And it may not hit us, but it may hit certain places, and it's a bad thing. And we need to remember that's Zoycher Abris, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, there's destruction around, and we've got to be very careful. However, there is the rainbow which appears more harmoniously and slowly and appears for a number of minutes, and we see it. He says that type of rainbow is actually a Siman Bracha, which is the one that we say the other part of the Bracha on, and he actually divides up how the two parts of the Bracha relate to the Klala, Zoycher Abris. But then Kayim B'Mamaro is the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an aspect of, you know, there's a certain sense of harmony which is coming through this rainbow, which is hopeful in the sense that a lot of the times the rainbows we see are longer experiences depending how fast we're driving. Nonetheless, what's so interestingly intellectually, what the Netziv is saying over here, is he's sort of addressing the same issue. Is like, you know, so is it good or is it bad? Well, it depended. The original rainbow wasn't a longer lasting experience. It was this flash of light, which is much more of a dangerous thing. The Siman Bracha might be the other version of it, which just sort of gives us a different look into this. We're going to see other Mepharshim later on, if we have a chance, who start going in this direction. The rainbow, we'll call it the primordial rainbow, is very different to the rainbow where we might be seeing today, but they might be shades of each, if you excuse the pun, in each other. Okay, so this is a very different way. Not going in the halachic direction, there are those who question this netziv and say, well, how can we say a bracha then if we're looking at a different rainbow to that which was originally presented, right? Let's hold the question for a second, because there's just a lot of ground still, okay? You're right. You're right. We're going to see a few examples of where the proof comes from. Okay, there'll be a more radical description in just a second. Okay, so but nonetheless, this is the way he views it, and he derives it from the psukim himself. We're not going to do it for the sake of time right now, but it is to be found in source 6. This is the text of the Netziv of Volozhin. Again, addressing a similar question is how bad, how good, or depending what there was actually seen. Maybe there's two different actual entities. Okay. Whether they created some of the same physical way or not. Nonetheless, here we go. So now just a few basic halachic questions which appear, and then we're going to drift off into meaning. Okay, so first of all is how much do you need to see? So it's not quite ambiguous. The Be'ur Halacha, the Chavetz Chaim suggests, quoting earlier in Mepharshim, of course, that you need to really see the full semicircle to see it. And he's not in. And Rav Moshe Sternbach suggests that if you don't see the full, the full span of the rainbow, then you would say with a bracha without shema malchus. I mean, just say if you see like in all those comic books where you have the two clouds and the nice half, like the little quarter arc, right? And there's a beautiful right. That you wouldn't say a bracha. You wouldn't say a bracha. You still say the bracha without the name of Hashem. You really need to see the full semicircle. Fascinatingly enough, just out of interest, physically speaking, if you're in an airplane, it's possible to see a full circle, actually. Okay, so just interestingly enough, when you're in the air, the refraction occurs in such a way you can actually see a full circle. But nonetheless, that's not the typical case. Most people were not in the air at the time that for most of human history.
So
you're
always there
without a bracha? No. If you're seeing half and more, then you're fine. The point is that if you're seeing a quarter or less, then we're not we're more questionable.
It's not that common to be able to see that much.
What did you say without
rainbow? It depends. Most times I've seen a rainbow has been a half a rainbow. I very rarely see small sections.
Without a shame of malchus.
Exactly. That's what Rav Moshe Sternbach suggests in Truvas and Hagos and Source 9 if we see it inside. How often? So what happens if, we're all hoping that the rain clears up today because we want to be absolutely sure that we can put away our sukkahs in good time, and it's Sunday after all. We get a Sunday to do things. So what happens if the rain clears up, and just as we're about to attempt to get to our sukkahs later this afternoon and everything's dried up, the rain comes out again, and boom, there's another rainbow, right? So what happens? What happens in such an instance? So usually speaking, there is a statute of limitations for a Birkas HaShevach. So for instance, if you see the Mediterranean Sea, you say a special bracha. You don't say it every time. Let's say you live in Netanya, right? Every time you wake up in the morning, you don't say the bracha on the Mediterranean Sea. You say the bracha only if you haven't been there for 30 days. That's the general length of time that's necessary to re-necessitate a bracha. However, the Sha'ar Eit Shuvah, which is one of the commentaries, the early commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, says in Source 10, is the Ayin Be'eritev Machzik Bracha. He quotes to Poiskem, Shekosel Shebesoich Shloshim Yam Tzorich Lachzor Levorech. You do say the bracha within 30 days again. It is not dissimilar to those birkas hashevach, which can only be said once monthly. Because when the clouds dissipated and the storm ended, that rainbow, that experience left. It disappeared. Because it's a new storm, so it's completely like a new entity. Everything's been renewed. And if the clouds have gone and returned, you say a new bracha could be even on the same day, even according to the Berhentor. Just like halacha, fascinating enough. Famously now, the one other aspect of halacha which relates to the Yecheskel experience is telling other people. So, the area is very familiar, we not tell other people, should we make it known? So the first place that we really see this being talked about is actually quite late on in the game. is in the works of the Chaya Adam, Rav Avram Danzig. So we're talking really now in the late 1700s. So he suggests in his work, the Chaya Adam, in parentheses actually, he has in source 11, he says, Aroha Keshes, Omer Baruch Atah Shem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Zocher HaBris Nehemah V'Risa V'Kayim HaMavara, that's the bracha, V'Asu Distakal Babi Yosef, and you can't look at it too much. That's the quote in the Shulchan Aruch. And in the parentheses he says, U'matzasi B'Sefer Echad Shmoy Ne'elam Mimeni, I saw quoted in a book and I can't remember the name. Okay, because remember in these days, it wasn't as if you just walked into the local shul and you could pull out any book which was recently published at Judaica Plus, right? I mean, so it's very hard to get hold of Sarim. So he must have had an opportunity at one point in life of reading something, and now he's codifying halacha decades later, and he knows that he saw this somewhere. So he says, I remember seeing she'ein lahagid l'chaver she'esh keshes mitam moitzi deba. You shouldn't tell your friend that there is a keshes, a rainbow, because of the reason of moitzi deba. What's moitzi deba? Moitzi Dibba literally means for bringing out bad tidings. There is a halacha, which is that we don't spread, we try not to spread bad tidings. You know, at the Lahavdil, the beginning of Douglas Adams has a trilogy called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and the beginning of a section called Mostly Harmless, he talks about everything, he says that nothing travels faster than the speed of light except for bad news. And then he says that they try to power rockets with bad news, but they found that nobody ever wanted them wherever they arrived. But the truth of the matter is that people don't like, bad news spreads. But there's halacha, moitzi deba huksil, based on a pasuk, that people who, you know, the people who always, you know, who are always the ones to be the first people to tell you, you know, guess who just passed away, or guess what just happened, and guess what just, you know, like all the terrible things that have... That's not, you know, you can see some of these news apps, I hate them because they're so sensationalist, meaning all they want to do is just talk about the latest catastrophe in terrible terms before they've even got the facts, because that's what sells, right? But the Judaism says, turn down on the spreading bad things. In the same way, we don't rush to tell about people who passed away. So in the same, right, the Gemara Pesachim Gemara Gittin talks about this, but we don't do this. So how far does this go? So fascinatingly enough, there is a tshuva written by the Chashukei Chemed, which is Rav Zilberstein from Bnei Brak, who's a formative posek in Bnei Brak today. He says in source 12, fascinating description. He says, Sha'ela, this is the question. Ne'ema b'mesechus bracha staf nun tes aroi keshes be'anon maim vorech. What do you say the blessing on? V'kosav achaya adam. He quotes the Chaya Adam, De'ein kedai lahagid lachavero diyesh keshes mitam moitzi diba. Ha'imut le'ikonis le'beis ha'kneses. V'lishol es chaveroi, ma'u nusach birkas ha'keshes. Ha-ha. So he has a way to do it. You say, you know, it's such a tough bracha. Do you mind? Can you help me with the nosach abracha? Because I don't know what to say. Now, have you told him, right? You're really telling, you're right. You know, but you are telling him, right? V'heichon yesh sidra b'matar shiavinu shekeis yesh keshes v'yatsu v'yavarchu. How can you enhance with so people go out and say abracha, but at the same time not tell them directly? Okay, so he says teshuva nirashimutar. He thinks that it is permissible to give a hint to the rainbow. Shneimar maseches pesachim, quoting the Gemara pesachim. Rav bar achua de Rabbi Chia ubar achse kisalik lahasam omale ivy kayam omale imas kayam omale imas kayam ta. So omale ivy kayam yanshan. So there's a Gemara over there where a certain relative of a particular rav had passed away, and instead of telling him, you know, so and so passed away, he says, how's your mother? How's your father? And he sort of doesn't answer the one question and makes it through hinting that unfortunately somebody's no longer around. You know, I guess they would say in the South African army, they would say that, you know, the colonel would say to the troops, he says, everybody who has a mother, please step forward. And then he says, not so fast, Hendrik. that's the way they would do it. So, the good old army way of, you know, experience of giving tough information. So nonetheless, the Gemara is saying that hinting is sufficient. So he says, "V'kol zois kadesh shloi loyma b'mefurash davar ra ki moitzi deba huksil hareish afa pisha asul hoitzi deba v'kol zois mutali remoiz al kach." So he says, of course, you can't explicitly say it, but you can hint to it, and this way you can do it. And again, we get back into the tussle over here that the Nativ was experiencing, which is that there is a rainbow which he believes is a siman bracha if it's a longer lasting. So you want people to know. On the other hand, it's a siman klala because it reminds us that Hashem was pulling out that rainbow card. So therefore, we are caught in the middle of this, and this is his suggestion, or his at least his heter in the way that we communicate that information. Now, so those are some basic halachic points of the main question should have talked about in the sugya. Now we revert back to AB's direction, which is like, you know, folks, like, who are we kidding? In the end of the day, you know, like, here we are. We're learning about this rainbow. We're talking about how Hashem gave this rainbow to all of humanity to remember the fact that He's going to, you know, save us and not destroy us. But let's be honest, right? We understand how rainbows work today, right? We know exactly what happens. You know, here's an example. I just put it from the physics classroom. The formation of the rainbow. We understand there is a thin mist of droplets which is hanging in the sky following the rainstorm. And what happens is, and sometimes during the rainstorm, and what happens is that the light travels through it, refracts it at an angle of between 42 and 45 degrees, and it appears to our eyes in the form of the rainbow because the white light is refracted through this prism of raindrops in such a way that we see those which are refracted at a greater angle, which are the ones which are the lighter colors, come down lower, and the higher ones we perceive higher, which is red, which is always at the top, and then towards the violet. So we know why it happens. Not only do we know why it happens, in fact, it is something which we can recreate in our regular garden or household, right? Take a look at the top of page 5. Rainbows are not limited to the dispersion of light by raindrops. The splashing of water at the base of a waterfall causes a mist in the air, which often results in the formation of rainbows. A backyard water sprinkle is another common source of a rainbow. Bright sunlight suspended droplets of water and the proper angle of sighting are three necessary components for viewing one of nature's most splendid masterpieces. Fantastic. And so it's nature's splendid masterpiece. So that's it. Let's leave it there. What was Hashem trying to do? You know, like, you know, what some people would say is, yeah, in those days they didn't know what it was. So God, this is how, like, you know, the prehistoric man kind of really didn't really know what was going on. So we don't believe that. So what's going on over here? You know, so how does this work? So it happens to be that we are certainly not the first people to realize this. This might be a little bit of a question. Famously speaking, there is the Ramban, Nachmanides, who 800 years ago says, in the end of the day, he knew the same information, not from the physics classroom, but from the Greeks. And he said in source, before we get to the Ramban, there's the Svarna, which makes it fascinating. The Svarna says that, yeah, you're right, and he recognizes the Achachmei Mechkar, people who know that you can reproduce a rainbow. But he says, you know what the deal is? There are two types of rainbow, coming back to the Netziv. The rainbow which was viewed at the times of Noah was in fact an inverted rainbow. It was the other way. Whereas the rainbow that we see today is the natural phenomenon. That was an unnatural phenomenon. The colors were the wrong way. Why? Because that was a supernatural experience for people to realize in that time. Fascinating. Again, this is sort of pushing the envelope of the Netziv even further. And not that it was the length of time, but in fact there was a color inversion, which occurred at the time of the now. Where does he get that from? Hard to know. But nonetheless, what he's trying to say is that if Hashem is saying this is special and unique, it can't be what we see today, which is not special and unique, which is just a natural phenomenon. So how does it work? Yes.
But you do see that phenomenon today. If the light is double reflected in the rainbow, you'll see a second rainbow.
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't think that's what he's referring to, though. What he's trying to say is that there was something which was not the natural phenomenon which was being experienced then. You want to take this even more in an extreme fashion. Rabbi Yonasan Abishitz, in his commentary called the Yaros Dvash, the rivers of honey, says a very, very fascinating idea. And he says that maybe it was, and this is just like, this is remarkable, you don't hear this every day. He says maybe the rainbow which was viewed at the times, going the same line, at the times of Noach, was not the regular rainbow, in which sense it was not a multi-chromatic color. It was, in fact, a rainbow of kuloi tcheles. It was a completely blue span rainbow. Why? And he goes through the psukim and he says, well, why? Because the word tcheles itself also has another meaning. What's the word tcheles? Tachles, or ending kala. Meaning to say that what he's suggesting is that maybe there was a real sign of destruction which was being expressed in this rainbow at the time, because it's not possible, says Rabbi Yonasan Abishitz, that what we're seeing today, which is reproducible in the chemistry lab or in our garden or at the waterfall, is the same thing then, if God is talking about it being special. So it must have been that what happened then was unique, different, and special. How so? It was something which actually directly related to destruction. They ask again on the Rav Yonasan Abishitz, so how do you say bracha today? Some people, right? If it's not the same thing, or if it's just a memory or a reminiscent of that original experience. Nonetheless, this is one direction you see the Mefarshim taking, which is Yeah, it's a different deal. We're not talking about the same thing.
It
however,
sounds like whenever you see it, you should not say it with a shame on
top. Right, so that's what actually the Ben Ishchai asks on this. The Ben Ishchai says we do still say it because it reminds us of that experience. Meaning, so Hashem's not reproducing that miracle, but he is giving us a natural, we'll call it a natural reminder of what that could have been. However, the Ramban is most famous on this, and the Ramban really sort of synthesizes, as opposed to, you see what the Yaros Tavash, what the Sforna, what ultimately the Nsiv are doing, they're not synthesizing, they're just saying, yeah, there's a hidden card in the game. Why is it hidden? Because we haven't seen it. Why haven't we seen it? Because that was the miracle that Noach saw, right? That's what they ultimately are saying. The Ramban says, no. Same rainbow then, now. In fact, same rainbow beforehand. So how does God tell us that he's making it as a sign? Says the Ramban, very simply. Top of page 6. We have to believe the Greeks. We're forced to. That through wet, damp air, light shining through it is refracted, and we see the rainbow as a result. I can see it myself. I've done it. He says, read the psukim carefully, folks. Let's read this very carefully. Ki omar es kashti nosati be'anon. It says, Hashem says, I placed, in the past tense, my rainbow in the clouds. But like omar ani nosain be'anon. Hashem's not saying, look, I'm going to pull a rabbit out of the hat. I'm going to make something new. Hashem says, I am placing what I originally placed. Meaning, I'm taking this natural phenomenon. Kasher omar zois oizabris Hashem ani nosain. When I'm making the covenant, I am using something which already exists. This is how we read it. The rainbow, which was in existence from the time of creation, because that is the rules of physics, I'm going to take and now I'm going to give it more religious significance so that when it appears, you're going to get a lesson from it. Of course it existed. I'm now not giving you a how, I'm giving you a why. All physics is doing is telling me a how. It's not telling me why. In fact, to take it even further, the Shlach HaKadosh quotes from Rav Moshe Yitzchak, the Ramo, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the next source, we're not going to do it inside, but he suggests the following. He says, you know what, that's why it is. You know, Rashi says a very interesting thing on Parshas Bechukosai. He says that when Hashem says, Nosati gishmechem be'itom, I'm going to give the rain at the right time. What does Rashi say? When is the right time for rain? We're all going to say never, right? Because we're not farmers, right? So Rashi says, on Leile Shabbos, Shabbos, on the nights of Shabbos is when they left people out. So we think the reason is everyone besides the rabbis walking, not walking to Shalom Zachar, right? So then it's a quieter time, so there's less people in the street, right? But says the Shlach HaKadosh, no! You know what's going on over there? Because you know what? If Hashem really wanted it, he could make it rain at night all the time. He could make sure that there's no light there to see the rainbow. Mm-hmm. Hashem can choose what angle the rain comes, what time the rain comes. He chooses when it comes. Why? Because he's got a certain agenda. Sometimes he wants us to see the rainbow. Sometimes he doesn't. Mm-hmm. So the physical phenomenon occurs. The question is Hashem choosing to show it to us for the reasons we need to see it or not? Mm-hmm. So this is a very fascinating idea, because again, this is a very fascinating way of dealing with this type of question, which comes up again and again. We've seen this before, because we talked about eclipses. This is one of the Mahalchim which talks about. Hang on to the thoughts just till the end, just for a few seconds. So now the million dollar question is why? Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done anything. He could have made pink bunny rabbits appear on the western horizon every time that he needed to remind us this. Why is it that suddenly in the sky there's this rainbow? What is the significance of the rainbow as opposed to anything else in the world that Hashem could have pulled out? This is what all the Mepharshim are trying to really struggle with. So Dr. Tiger's got a really fascinating point. That is like, imagine you are Noach. In fact, imagine you are any human for the next few generations. And what happens is there you are, and unfortunately you don't have to go think too far. Imagine you live in Puerto Rico right now, and you see clouds. Right? What's going through your mind right now? And you're having these terrible, terrible experiences, the thoughts of destruction. Think about it, right? Meaning to say, the moment you see the clouds on the horizon, that's a bad sign, right? That means to say the last time that happened, that meant to say everything I knew and recognized was no longer. Think about what Noach thinks when he sees the darkness on the horizon. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, you know what? in and amongst the darkness, there's a little bit of light. So you think about it, Rav Hirsch points this out, as Dr. Tiger was saying. So what a beautiful idea. You're seeing the darkness, you're seeing, you know, the PTSD is about to set in, right? And at this point in time, no, don't worry, I'm there. Comes back to Moshe and Moshe's point, I'm present in the darkness. I'm present in the danger, in the destruction which you saw beforehand. Don't worry. There's still something which is coming through, which is just a really, really beautiful idea, which maybe it is why humanity today, we don't naturally dread thunder. We could spend our whole lives being in terror, you know, natural taboo because of that experience, which is one of them. What was that? And that's perhaps the bracha, changing those clouds into it. Another expression, which is just a fascinating idea, is in the days when people would fight battles, the primary long distance weapon, of course, is the bow. The word for the bow itself is akeshes in Hebrew, right? Which of course relates to the fact that the rainbow is called akeshes. So the Ramban points out that when one shoots the bow, of course, one has the string towards oneself. One has the arch of the bow towards the enemy, because that's the way one strings the arrows from the quiver. So what happens? Hashem now displays us a bow, but which direction is the bow pointing? The bow is pointing upwards towards heavens, metaphorically speaking. So what's Hashem saying? Hashem is saying that, you know, the sign in battle used to be when you showed us a sign of truce, everybody would invert their bows. That would be the way it would work in war. It's like sort of like having, you know, like sort of uncoupling the gun, you know, unloading the magazine. What it's saying is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's almost like a sign that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is that the war's over, right? There's the problems that have existed up till now, it's fine. Don't worry. There's an end. There's not going to be a destruction that you saw beforehand. Zugesund. And maybe just close with one last thought. I think this is very true of us. And of what we see, and that is that ultimately speaking, a rainbow is made up of white light. When that white light goes through a prism, it refracts into the seven colors of the spectrum, which is something to think about in the sense that, you know, in a certain sense, Hashem is perfection. Hashem is everything. And when he expresses himself in this world, he expresses himself in lots of different colors. You know, the darkest of all colors, of course, is the red. You know, in the old days when you used to go into dark rooms, my grandfather was a professional photographer, so he had a dark room. And dark rooms, of course, were only lit with red light because that wouldn't affect the development of as the photos are going through the chemical. And so the red light is the lowest. There's sometimes where Hashem's light is very, very, very minimal in the world. There's some people whose glimmer of humanity or godliness is very low. In fact, even the animals. And then there's times where we shine brightly. There's times there's very high points, there's very low points. You see people doing terrible things to each other. You see terrible natural phenomenon. And then you see what happens is like, you know, the person who gets into his kayak and, you know, in Harvey and is busy saving people in the streets. You know, on the one hand, utter destruction at the same time. You know, the gleaming spirit of humankind at the same time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I get it. There are lots of different times, there are lots of different people. And I'm willing to accept them all. I realize that sometimes reality is a lot more fractured and complicated than the light or the purity of where it all started at. But still, I'm willing to accept you. And the sign is that yes, all of you in all your different hues and colors, even the ones with the least amount of light, it's all fine. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the Ois HaBris. That reminds you of me, but at the same time, it also reminds me of you. I come one step closer. It's like the father stepping out and saying, I understand. You're just a child. You're just a child. I'm not going to persecute you further. Anyways, food for thought on a really fascinating topic. There's so much more to be said, but this is at least a basic framework. Thank you very much, everybody. Rabbi Chanan Melakash, Amor Tzalak, Hosh Baruch Hu, Nezakos, Yisrael, Lepil, Fakir, Bolem, Tzalak, Mitzvah, Shnei, Mar, Nachov, Etz, Amantzik, Koyag, Zil, Tzalak, Yadzir.